The WYSL stations present an hour of truth for the battered but proud people of the Empire State. From the financial and entertainment epicenter of New York City to the sleeping and empty small cities and towns of upstate, which once bustled with manufacturing, mining, and farming. We all know from inspiration, history, and nature, we deserve a return to the success and growth of generations past, a birthright being squandered by corruption in Albany, and the depredations of an insecure, scheming mountebank posing as governor, who loathes both us and himself. As liberty beckoned to enslaved peoples behind the Iron Curtain via American broadcasts after World War II, we now say, believe, rise, and join us. Welcome to Radio Free New York.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Radio Free New York. I'm your host, Andrew Hollister, and I am back in the WYSL studios with Bob Savage.
Woohoo! Well, how's it feel to be back in a real radio studio and not, like, perched on a bed in some hotel room?
Yeah. No, it feels pretty good. You know, don't get me wrong. Being in Europe was a great time and had a lot of fun there. But it's also great to just be back at home.
Absolutely. So. And look at the weather you've walked into.
Yeah, I brought some warm weather with me, you know, hooked it, brought it along on the plane. The plane ride back, I tell you what, was just, it wasn't great. It's just real bad.
You're heading west, so you're going to have that jet lag thing to deal with.
Yeah. So they're about 6 hours ahead. So right now, you know, it's 1 o'clock for us. It would be creeping up on 7 p.m. for me.
When did you get in relative to when we're recording this show? We're doing this show.
I got in about 12 hours ago, maybe.
Oh, so you're not out of this yet?
No, not at all. It'll take a couple days for me to reset. By the Monday show, I should be good to go, rocking and rolling. So yeah, but I, you know, the time change isn't usually a problem for me. You know, it's not a big deal. But I tell you, the flight, so I flew from Prague to Paris, which was about a two-hour flight, and then from Paris to JFK, which ended up being about a seven-and-a-half-hour flight,
yeah.
I think. And normally that's fine, but for whatever reason, the like there were times that the plane felt like way warmer than it should have, you know, and I was just like was not feeling great. So then I was in
What airline was it?
So it was Delta and Air France. They like partner up for some of those international. So I flew over here on Air France and then, from JFK back to Rochester, that was Delta. And I gotta say, so I've done a fair amount of flying. For listeners who don't know, my wife is originally from the Czech Republic. The majority of her family is still there. So on occasion we'll go over. This year it was for the holidays, spend time with family, that sort of thing. So we've flown a lot. My wife and I, we've been together now. Going on 10 years. So we've been together for 10 years. We got married about 2 years ago. So we've done a lot. And I've flown with some really crappy airlines. And I've flown with some pretty good ones. And Delta and Air France, they were actually pretty decent. My wife and I actually ended up flying on two separate airlines just because of the way the dates worked out. We couldn't get tickets together. And so she flew with Norwegian Airlines. We had a totally different experience.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so her airline, which I think her ticket was even cost more than mine, if I remember correctly. The thing was she just couldn't get enough time off to be gone for as long as I was. And so her airline ticket, not only was it more expensive, but on the long leg of the trip, so she flew from New York City to Norway. They serve no food, no drinks. You had to pay for that extra. It's $45 for a meal.
$45 for airline food?
Yeah.
Can I pack a lunch?
For a little square, you know, you see some of the airline food and you're like, man, I'm envious of what they serve in a hospital. You know? So
terrorists are afraid to eat it.
Yeah, exactly. So and like on her flight, no blankets. It was like $9 if you wanted a blanket, you know, like that sort of thing. They didn't charge you.
They charge you extra for the seat? I mean, otherwise you had to stand in the aisle?
Yeah, so it was I had only flown on one other airline that like that. It was called Air Transat, which is an Indian airline that flies out of Toronto. And they do like flights to like Dubai and things like that. And they were the same thing where you paid for everything extra except for the bathrooms. I guess some airlines
charge you for the bathroom.
Well, some airlines charge you to use the bathroom. That's the thing. There's actually an airline emerging. I think they're going to be out of London, and there's no seats. You basically stand on the plane. And
oh,
it's supposed
gosh.
To be like crazy cheap, like $200 round trip type thing to go to London. But if you want to use the bathroom, it's like $35. If you want a bottle of water,
oh,
it's, you know, $17, like that sort of thing. So yeah. So
suppose you need oxygen.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, look, you're turning blue. Yeah. By the way, before I give you this mask, it's gonna be $109. We'll take a major credit card, sir.
Yep,
sir.
Yep, exactly,
sir.
So yeah, so that is kind of just a little idea of how airlines differ, very, very different depending on the airline. My flight, I think I got served two or three meals with snacks in between, you know, drinks, bottle of wines included, if you like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus hers, it was like, oh, you want water? Yeah, that's going to be $15. So just very different experiences. And I think probably at some point I'll tell you guys a little bit about some tips and trips while traveling, if you travel internationally or even, you know, domestically, things that I've learned over the years that can be a really big deal, you know, if you want to travel comfortably, but also affordably, because I do not like to pay for my travel, or at least not a lot. I don't mind paying for it, but, you know, if I have the choice to spend, we've actually bought tickets at one point in time that were about $380 round trip to Germany. And
there's a lot of good deals out there now.
Yeah, yeah, there are good deals. You can use the internet.
Like, I think Allegiant's got some Florida trips for $29.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. See,
but it's interesting. They fly into little bitty airports, like instead of Tampa St. Pete, they fly into Clearwater.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. So one of the things that's interesting, at least with my experience, is that I normally fly internationally. I don't fly domestic very often. So some of those domestic type things I don't always know about. It's more of the international flights and services that I know more about. So yeah. So let's move on here. I want to talk to you guys about when I came back. Because it was pretty interesting, you know, come back to the States, and this morning, Yolanda actually came in this morning, so I got in super late last night. Yolanda came in this morning, she took an Uber from the airport back to the house, and she said, yeah, well, we're driving from the airport to the house, there was like six or seven cops all perched in like not the normal spots, kind of like hidden and everything. And so it was just so strange because we don't see that many, you know, cops on the way to house, maybe one or two, you know, set up on the highway, speed trap type thing.
There was a big incident last night on the expressways.
Was there? Okay.
Yeah. It was a DWI in Henrietta where some guy was on Clay Road in Henrietta and he was going like a bat out of hell and missed a curve. He hit the sound barrier, the baffles that separate Clay Road from I-390
okay.
so hard he broke the concrete off, and the car wound up on the shoulder of 390. So 390 was closed off for 6 hours.
Wow.
It was ridiculous. I had to drive out here on Route 15 at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. So that might explain it. It was interesting because she
could have been part of it.
Yeah, yeah. So she asked the Uber driver, she's like, hey, you know, why are there so many cops? Like, did something happen? And he said that it was the first time in 50 years that they had so few DWIs over the holidays. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but he told her that there were only 12 DWIs over the holidays and that they had to bump up their numbers because they had made so little money over the holidays that they were starting to set up like more speed traps and more this and that.
Oh, Mr. Uber driver, I don't know about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so
that might be a stretch.
Like, yeah, it sounds like probably your analysis of what's going on might be a little more accurate.
I don't think the police see DWIs as a profit center. I just don't see that.
I'd hope not. But it is extremely expensive. If you ever get a DWI, I haven't personally gotten one. I know a few people who have. And yeah, it's
yeah, 10 grand is not an unreasonable figure.
Yeah, that's it. Man, if you can get out for 10 grand, you're doing pretty good. That's it's not uncommon. But what was interesting is, as she was saying that yesterday, my layover in JFK, I called up Larry Sharp because I was down in New York City. I said, hey, I'm going to be in JFK for about 4 hours. You want to get together? And a similar thing happened. We're going, and there's cops pulling everybody over. And on the way back, we went, we got some food. We talked about some really cool ideas for New York that I'll be sharing with you guys later on, and a few other episodes. And he said, yeah, you remember in the campaign, we'd drive and we'd see the license plates of out-of-state drivers being pulled over. So Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida. And he's like, I just couldn't help but think and stay out because people exactly. come here, they get fines way above what their state would normally charge them. And they go, yeah, why would I come back to New York? That was an awful experience. So it was interesting. We both had similar experiences, different parts of the state. And we're going to take a quick break here. So we'll be back in a moment on Radio Free New York.
This is Dom Genova, owner of Genesee Valley Motors in Avon, your no-nonsense car dealer. Well, we're your no-nonsense truck dealer, too, selling Rams and Fords up to the mightiest that they make. And we have a shop with Master Techs open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., 6 days a week, even Saturday, so you can get your truck serviced when it's not billing hours for you. You may not be used to that. Visit RochesterWorkTrucks.com. That's RochesterWorkTrucks.com.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
All right.
Don't know what that is.
Oh. Oh.
You got some psychedelic stuff going on there, yeah. Andrew Hollister.
All right, so we are back here on Radio Free New York. I'm your host, Andrew Hollister, and I'm back in the WYSL studio with Bob Savage.
He's trying to get his stream working.
Yeah, yeah.
His computer has been obviously crashed, hacked by Russians.
Yep. It hasn't switched over with the time zone yet. That's what it is. It's struggling here. So those of you listening on the live stream, hopefully you guys can hear us okay. I am struggling a little bit with the microphone, but I think what's happening is the microphone in the computer is actually picking us up here in studio.
I can't imagine what else would make that noise. So.
Yeah. So that's probably what's going on here. So before I jump into the next piece here, which we're going to talk about the man who got two moments of fame, and it's a pretty interesting story, and I'm going to give you my take on this story, which is probably going to be different than what you've heard so far, and we'll get into that in a second. But first I want to talk about Ben Wassel, because I've talked about him every show I possibly can. He is a military veteran, 90% disabled. He's got family, and he was the first person to be arrested under the New York State Safe Act. He had an appeal hearing coming up on January 17th.
Mm-hmm.
That date has been rescheduled. So that's why I want to let you guys know. I know a lot of people were trying to take off for work for this, rearrange their schedule. The New York Attorney General intends to fight this case. He intends to fight this case and make sure that this guy's life still remains painful.
Yeah, trashed.
And trashed and damaged over this law. So he's filing an 86-page brief and has had them reschedule the court date to February 28th at 9 a.m. Same address, 50 East Avenue in the city of Rochester. So I just want all the listeners to know, if you were planning on trying to get that day off, if you were going to try to go to that event, it has been rescheduled as of, I think it was the last few days. I think on Friday, late afternoon, is when I got the notification about this.
Give them the date again.
So that is February 28th, 9 a.m., and that is going to be at 50 East Ave. And actually, Monday afternoon is what I meant. Even my dates are messed up.
86-page brief. That's that's an intimidation tactic. That's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, yeah. It's a load of crap. It's just meant to do a few things. And one of those is to scare people away from supporting. And the other is to just try to make things more expensive. I mean, that's one of the things that they do in the courts in New York, is it's really a battle of who can spend more money. And at the end, the last man with money left over is the one who typically ends up winning.
Yeah, and you wind up fighting when you're being prosecuted like this by the state. You're paying for both sides. Your tax dollars fund the prosecution of your case, and then you pay to defend yourself against the case that's being made at your expense.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a terrible, terrible process. It needs to go away. It needs to stop. But that's where we are. And until we until the people get up and really change out their government, you know, I guess we'll be talking about it a whole bunch.
It's incredible to me that people voted Cuomo back in. It's just astonishing.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty.
Look around at the state. Look at your roads. Anybody notice how the roads in New York State are enough to knock the fillings out of your teeth?
Yeah, yeah. It's so bad. You know, that's one of the things we talked about when we were on check, because the taxes there are just so much less. And we were joking around about, we can't find any potholes anywhere. And they've got the same weather we do. You know, they even have some of their roads are still cobblestone roads. And
they're smoother than New York's.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing.
Can we have a cobblestone throughway, please?
Yeah, you've got these giant cobblestones in there with these big gaps around them. It's like, wow, the roads are still better than New York.
They have trolley rails in there, too?
Yep, they've got, they call them a tram. But yeah, they've got that, the metal rail is what they call it. And their public transportation blows ours out of the water. It's very frustrating.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, Europe is an entirely different situation as compared. The United States has a very geographically diverse population. The population density here is much sparser, and even with the density that they have in Europe, in Western European countries, the governments still have to subsidize the mass transit.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that does happen. I think in Czech Republic that the rails are either government ran or subsidized. I don't know enough about it yet.
That's true in all the European countries. And the truth of the matter is, too, I mean, with that density of folks, that number of folks living in a square mile of population in France and Germany and Britain, roads just wouldn't work. If everybody had to go somewhere in private cars,
it would look like New York City
or LA. it would look terrible. And by the way, that's why mass transit works in New York and driving your car doesn't. Same deal.
Yep. Yep. So I want to move in to the man who got two moments of fame. Now, those of you who might have seen this post, I think I posted a couple days ago, and I want to talk about this, and only because it's a local thing, and I think that it's going to shine some light on some stuff that happens locally. So the guy's name is Anthony LaMarca, and people listening to the show, maybe you even know this guy because he's a local guy. He's from Rochester, Canandaigua area. He was facing third-degree grand larceny charges, and according to the news, has been on the run for over a year. And he got caught recently. He was all over the media because he was interviewed on the show Good Day Rochester about his job as a bartender at Lawrence Street Bar. I think it was ADW was the name of the bar. So, you know, obviously he got arrested. They're like, oh, we found him. And the thing that I was just kind of like wondering, there's a few things that just kind of rubbed me strange.
Wait, what was he arrested for?
Third degree grand larceny.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that is, but it sounds like
he stole
theft
something.
Of a car is what it sounds like. So as I'm reading through this story, and, you know, the DNC posted it, and I think, like, Channel 13 and Channel 8, you know, this is big story, and I'm over here in Czech Republic, like, wow, like, who in their mind would go on television and do an interview on a popular television show when they're on the run? You know, it just struck me kind of weird. And then, you know, then I wondered, well, how'd it take the police so long to find this guy when he was clearly working a job? You know, and then I started thinking about, well, man, in New York, we pay income tax. We've got New York State paid the family leave. You've got workers' comp. We've got all these databases with all your information. The government's got their hand in every part of your wallet. And yet they didn't know he had a job. He was working what seems to be, you know, through a business. It's not like he was paid under the table or anything like that. There's no indication of that. And I'm not saying, like, well, we should have better government surveillance. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm very much against that. What I'm saying is there was, like, records all over the place for well over a year of where this guy was located. And it took him being on television for him to get found. And then I started thinking to myself, why wouldn't you call in sick? Why would you agree to go and do this television interview at work if you were on the run from the police? Unless you just thought nobody would see it.
Well, maybe you didn't know. Sometimes, you know, the management will invite a TV station in, or there's a promotion going on, and the workers just don't know. It's too late.
Usually you know, because the boss wants everything to look nice. Or
had a bag over my head.
Nice,
you know,
or,
eye holes.
So I was like, it just kind of rubbed me wrong, you know, and this story was trending. It was on fire. Everybody's like, oh, you know, tattoo stupid to this guy's forehead, you know, all this stuff.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, all right, come on. So I just Googled his name. I Googled Anthony LaMarca, Rochester, New York. And guess what I found? I found his Twitter account. I found his Facebook account. This guy wasn't on the run. He was posting, like, every couple of days, hey, I'm going to the gym today. I'm working here today. I'm doing this and that, you know. And I saw his Facebook account. Very, very similar. I mean, in August, he posted saying, hey, guys, I need a ride. Does anybody know somebody? I got $40 in gas money. Can somebody give me a ride? If the police were actually chasing and hunting this guy down, they could have done the same thing. These posts were public. They weren't private. They weren't friends only. These are public posts. They could have sent a squad car to go pick him up. Yeah, we'll give you a ride.
You're right.
So,
won't need the gas money.
Yeah. So then as I started reading through, I started, I went and saw his recent posts, and I saw, you know, friends and family and stuff. And he had this post, and I'm going to kind of, like, paraphrase it here. I thought I wrote down the quote, but I don't see it. He basically said, hey, guys, thank you, you know, friends and family, for reaching out to me. The media has wildly misconstrued this story. I wasn't on the run by any means. Clearly, I wasn't hiding, you know. and now I have to try to rebuild my reputation and get my life back. And, you know, just comment to people like, yeah, you've been here in the public there. Like, what, like, if you were running from the police? And to me, it sounded like that this guy probably didn't even know that whatever this charge was.
Well, I was going to say,
against him.
I mean, would you behave that way if you thought there were going to be criminal charges pending against you?
Yep. So in one of his comments, he says, and this is actually a quote, he said, I think it just comes down to saving face. It sounds better that I was on the run and not that they didn't try to find me.
Who used that term? Was it law enforcement or was it the media?
Well, it was plastered all over the media. I'm not sure if law enforcement said he was on the run or if the media
echoed it.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. But the reason I wanted to talk about this story is because I think this matters, you know, and I don't know this guy. I only saw it because I was looking at local media. But I'm just really tired of the mainstream media picking up stories, not fact checking anything, making things up, selling people on this story just to drive revenue, and in the process ruining people's reputation, ruining their lives. You know, and I don't know this guy, right? Maybe he's a bad person. Maybe he deserves this. I don't know. But it doesn't seem to be that he was, you know, that he knew what was going on at all. And I've seen this happen to other people and actually friends that I know who have gone through stuff where the police maybe did something that they shouldn't have. And I'm not doing this to attack the police, all right? I'm just saying there's good cops, there's bad cops, there's going to be people everywhere in between. I have a lot of respect for somebody who puts on a uniform and says, I will go out and protect the people in my community. But mistakes happen, bad things happen. And I've seen this happen, and I've seen people, basically the media covering for the police at the expense of somebody else who then can't get a job anymore. So that's just something I wanted to bring up and share with you guys, that always be critical when you see an episode. Do a little independent research, because the media, they're selling ad dollars. That's how they make their money. The story's got to be sexy. We're going to take a real quick break here on Radio Free New York, and we'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Voice of Liberty. AM 1040 Avon Rochester, FM 92.1 Rochester, FM 95.5 Spencerport, and WYSL1040.com everywhere.
At University Eye Specialists, I see many patients who suffer from dry, irritated, or itchy eyes. Sometimes these symptoms are often due to severe dry eye. Over-the-counter eye drops often help, but sometimes dry eye may require treatment with prescription medication. Dry eye is a very treatable medical condition that should be taken very seriously. The health of your eyes is very important to us. Please feel free to call any one of our local offices for an appointment.
In America, we are living longer, healthier lives. The longer we live, the more likely we are to develop eye conditions such as glaucoma, macular degeneration, and diabetic eye disease. If you are over the age of 40, it's important to have a thorough eye examination in order to identify vision-threatening conditions at an early stage. At University Eye, we have the technology and experience to screen for and to treat glaucoma, macular degeneration, and diabetic retinopathy. At University Eye, your vision is our mission.
Phone 1-800-724-0938.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
All right, guys, we are back here on Radio Free New York. I am Andrew Hollister, your host of the show, back in the WYSL studios after being gone for about 3 weeks here.
Gone but not forgotten.
Gone but not forgotten. Yeah, and I did broadcast from Czech Republic, and hopefully you guys caught the show. I know a lot of people online did. And people are keeping in touch, so it was great. Thank you guys so much for that. And also to the people online, if you have any questions, comments, please feel free to comment, ask me a question, send me a message. I always try to check them throughout the break and throughout the show to answer the questions for you. Before we took our break, we were talking about the man who kind of made a big local splash. Yeah. I guess is the best thing to say there. And the media was saying he was on the run. He got caught by being on television, and I just had a big issue with it because it didn't seem that this guy even knew that he was on the run. You know, he didn't seem to know that the police were looking for him. His name got slammed all across the media. And this guy's working on rebuilding his reputation. I don't know the guy at all.
Go to get his reputation back.
You know, chances are he probably lost his job or is in the process of losing it, unless he's got an extremely understanding boss. It probably brought some unwanted attention to his job as well, because the place that he worked was also plastered all over the news. And
what was the necessity for that? I don't get that at all.
Well, it was because he was on TV to promote that business. So
okay,
so they were
they
like,
have to, but only the people who are watching TV at the time would note that, The other outlets didn't have to point out his place of employment, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Unless it was part of the case somehow. I don't know what the facts of the case are.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty short as far as what was there. But the issue is the media is never held accountable for any of this. And it's like it's a hard thing here because we have the protection of freedom of speech. And where does that line get drawn when you don't vet a story at all? I mean, like I said, I spent 5 minutes. I typed this guy's name into Google. I found his public profiles and saw that clearly if he was on the run, like they made it seem like this guy's a fugitive from justice, they could have found him at any time in the last 12 months very easily. He was posting where he was working, when he was going to be at work, when he was going to the gym, when he needed a ride from friends. So I really am upset with the media because they took somebody's life and reputation, possibly their job, and for a sexy story that's going to drive ad revenue, which I'm going to talk about here in a second, they just went ahead and did this. And if he is innocent or if it was an honest mistake, he's going to spend probably years rebuilding his life, rebuilding his reputation. You know, he goes to apply to work somewhere and someone's like, oh, you're that guy. I saw it. And then whose story are they going to take? What they saw all over the news or this guy's?
Two distressing trends in media. One is the conflation of opinion and news. Where the media outlets are really pushing the convictions of the individual, you know, the editorial staff versus just telling you what the facts are.
Yeah.
The other is the conflation of news and analysis with opinion. And what's happening now, this is particularly happening in cable TV news, where opinion masquerades as analysis. They trot this stuff out. Analysis should be, you break the story down factually. You say, okay, so the plan is to invade Syria with these troops on this date, and here's what the political objective is, and here's the statements of the political vectors that are in the drivers who are involved in this thing. That's analysis. Analysis is not, I think that Donald Trump is a lowlife.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because he says dumb things on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, and we definitely see that. We're seeing bending of facts for ratings. We're seeing opinion being presented as truth and factual. And like you said, analysis, when really it's just an opinion, you know, and some things are factual, but it's becoming very difficult for the average person to look at media, see what's going on, and know without having to do additional research themselves, was this fact? Or was this somebody's opinion? Because the lines have blurred. The way it's being written, the way it's being presented, you just really don't know anymore.
And a lot of it is the driver of this situation is the marketing of the individual news outlets. And the way that people are consuming, quote, news, unquote, these days is very similar to the way that they consume sports. I mean, they line up with – they put on their team jersey. They get their Republican or Democrat gear on or whatever. And it's like they're watching the game when they're watching – the quote news. So they watch the news channels which validate their political beliefs and they get satisfaction from that. And this is what makes political dialogue, real political dialogue, difficult in this country, or at least it's a contributing factor. And the politicians love it because they know that they can get a certain audience guaranteed with certain news vehicles, whether it's MSNBC or whether it's Fox, for example.
No, absolutely. And so as I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, you know, what can people do to combat this? What can people do to hold their media accountable? Like I said, it's really hard. You can't just like go and sue somebody because it always comes back to freedom of speech, which is protected, which is a good thing, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of association. However, when the media destroys somebody's life or reputation with, you know, without really doing any type of due diligence, how do you hold them accountable? How do we as the people hold the media accountable? So one of the things that I saw, I actually saw this quite a bit in Larry and my's last campaign when we were running for governor and lieutenant governor. we would see lots of people get up, and if the media said, oh, this is who's running for governor, and they left out Larry's name, they'd start commenting on their posts and say, hey, did you, you know, you left out Larry. Why did you do this? Because we had a big issue with media as well. The thing is, that, although was great and it was great to have activism, I want to talk with you guys a little bit about how the media funds their production and how they make money and how I think that there's a better way. Because by going to that media company, whether it's a news station, production, whatever, you go to their page, you've now increased their traffic. And when they're selling ads, they're selling it based on traffic. And then you're commenting on their page, you're increasing their engagement. So then they can go to advertiser and say, hey, you should give us more money. Look at all this traffic we're generating. We're doing this. And you're trying to like fight and protest them. You're actually increasing their profits and making it more lucrative for them to continue to write things that are bad that you oppose. So,
yeah, that's the perverse effect of what's going on between Donald Trump and the New York Times. Yeah. Because the New York Times made an editorial decision to really bash President Trump, and it's increased their circulation 30%.
Yeah,
because they've got an audience that's really, really receptive to that message in liberal New York City. Yep. So you know, the more Trump bashing that goes on, the more people tend to buy the paper. That's the short-term good news for the New York Times. The bad news is Donald Trump's not going to be president forever.
Yeah.
In which, yep, at that point, you're dead.
Yeah. Well, and not just that, but then you have conservatives who are probably going to their sites and posting, oh, you know, I disagree with this, this is wrong, and it's increasing their web traffic. So the conservatives who are going to defend Trump on these pages are actually showing the Times that what they're doing is good for their bottom line. So what I'd like to do is tell you guys the way that I think that we can take the media and show them that we don't approve, that we disapprove. And this doesn't – I don't care if you're right, left, middle of the road. You're going to find some media that you disapprove of. You're going to find some fake news posted somewhere. This will work anywhere. So the first thing is you go to the page where this news article is and you find the advertisers and the sponsors. These are the people who have paid their money to place their ad on this site. And, you know, so you look around, you'll see like a local restaurant running a promo. You'll see a car dealership advertising their new 2019 model at the top or midway through in the banner. If it's a video, you might have to watch a 15-second clip before you can see the actual story. So the first thing you do, you take those companies' names down, you call them up, you ask to speak to their manager, and you say, I just want to let you know, I saw that you are advertising with this publication. Your ad is running on this article. I disagree with this on whatever level. Explain your principles, explain whatever, and just tell them, I will not patronize your business as long as it's here. And very plain, very simple, if your ad is going to sponsor this story, I won't come to your restaurant. Now, maybe you're a customer there that goes frequently and they'll carry more weight. Maybe you're not, and maybe they'll still listen. Then share this action. So this is where social media comes in. Now you share this with other people in your network. And you say, hey, today I'm fighting fake news. I called the manager of insert business name here and told them I'm not going to spend money at their establishment as long as their ad shows up on this article. And then you say, you know, the manager's name is whatever, and you know his or her phone number is this, and their email is this. Help me hold our local media accountable by doing this today, and ask your friends and ask your family to do the same thing. I'll tell you what, it won't take many phone calls and many emails for that business to reach out to that media publication, to that news station, to whatever it is, and say, "Will you take my ad off this page? It's hurting me." I'm supposed to be gaining business by advertising with you, not losing it. So what does this do? Now the media has a choice to make. They have to decide, are they going to lose their advertisers? Are they going to lose their revenue, which is what keeps them in business? Or are they going to choose to continue to write bad stories that have fabricated facts, purposely leave out information that would change the story, some political agenda that you disagree with, or some principle that you disagree with, they will have to choose between getting paid or running somebody's life into the ground. And that, I think, is the absolute best and probably the only way to really hold media accountable is with their revenue. And the only way you can do that is start with the people that give it to them, which is their advertisers.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, yeah. So I know I know that you know, it's a little more it probably feels better to go on a page and comment about how you disagree with an article or a post or something like that, but that really just rewards them. You're rewarding the bad behavior. If you don't want to reward the bad behavior, then the right way to do it is going to be that way. And that's not the only way. I'm sure there's other ways. I'm sure people have some better ideas or something like that. But being the business guy I am, knowing how advertising works, that's the best way I could come up with to hold local media accountable. So we're going to take another quick break here on Radio Free New York, and we'll be back in a moment.
As long as we're talking about direct response, be sure to let your local affiliate know you appreciate their carrying Radio Free New York with Andrew C. Hollister. We'll be back.
From Avon Feed and Supply, introducing Dry Shod waterproof footwear. Dry, comfortable feet, even on those warmer days. Avon Feed has a big selection of Dry Shod for men and women, offering fully flexible athletic shoe sizing for great fit and maneuverability. Its exclusive insulation breathes and keeps you warm without bulk, and you'll stay dry top to bottom with state-of-the-art waterproofing. While you're at Avon Feed, find everything for your pet, from feeding bowls to toys, leads, collars, beds, crates, and tie-outs. Avon Feed and Supply has with a big pet chain stores will never have. Tim Cole and his great knowledgeable staff. And if you think you'll save money at that pet superstore, well, think again. While you're at Avon Feed, don't forget the two-legged pets with River Rat Thousand Island cheese and great flavors, including hard-to-find mean and nasty. Plus, once again, nut butters, Nunday mustards, and Rickles pickles. Open weekdays 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 4. Avon Feed and Supply. West Main Street at the bottom of the hill, just west of the circle.
You're listening to Radio Free New York.
On the WYSL stations.
All right, guys. This is Andrew Hollister live in the WYSL studio here for Radio Free New York. We're also broadcasting on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. And Bob was asking me over the break. He's like, "Oh, so do you feel like crap?"
You know. Well, you know, it's a long flight.
And yeah, no, it was. I mean, I was in the air for a total of, I think, 15 and a half hours for the traveling. And that would be
absolute sheer hell for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in the fetal position, those teeny tiny airline seats. Yep. And I always have the world's worst luck and sitting next to horrible passengers. I tell people this story, and they look at me and they say, "Yeah, you're making it up." And I am absolutely not. I came back from Orlando, Florida, and I had a guy sitting next to me who was chewing tobacco.
Mm. Huh.
Just imagine that for two and a half hours. Yeah. With a paper cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, spitting in it every so often.
Oh my God.
Yep. Yeah, so speaking of travel, I figured I'll throw a few travel tips in here before we the last thing I want to talk about is the IRS and the government shutdown. But before I do that, I'm going to give you guys a couple little travel tips that I always share with friends when I'm traveling to help make the airline experience just a little more enjoyable, I guess, tolerable, you know, depends on what you want to call it. The first thing I do, I don't check luggage. Anything that I'm traveling with, I travel with a carry-on. I was gone for 3 weeks. I had just a carry-on.
Yeah, a lot of people are shipping their luggage. They just ship at UPS.
Yeah, it might be cheaper that way.
It probably is.
And you don't have to deal with all the crap and the damage and everything with the airline. I love just walking up, dropping my bag, let go through the x-ray machine, going through security, get on the plane. When the plane lands, I grab my bag. I leave. I don't wait a half an hour to an hour for luggage. I don't wait for them to break all my stuff and then fight with me about reimbursing it. I don't wait for them to accidentally put it on the wrong plane and ship it to another country, which has happened to me before, and to other friends, too. I actually had a friend who when they were on their way back, their luggage got put on the wrong plane, and the airline gave them kind of like a tracking thing where they could track where their luggage is. And they're like, oh, your luggage will be back to you in about 3 days. And they tracked, and it went from like Detroit to California to Arizona to like all over, and then finally back in Rochester, and they delivered it to their home. But it's just, you know, so I don't deal with that. I do just the carry-on. I pack just really specifically. There's not a lot of things that you really need when you're traveling.
Most people overpack.
They
crazily.
Do. Yes, yeah. So one of the things I do every trip, I always make a list of the things I used and the things that I packed but didn't need. And so over the years, what I've packed has gotten so small that the biggest thing I have to pack around now is my laptop. So I have a 15-inch laptop, which is not the largest laptop, but it's not a small 13-inch either. And I struggle to find a bag big enough that will fit my laptop, including what I normally carry. So I carry such a small thing that the biggest thing is usually my laptop. And you can totally do it. It just takes a little practice. You know, you'll figure out the biggest thing you need is socks and underwear, you know, just like camping and anything else. The other stuff you can, you know, you can usually wash clothes wherever you go and that sort of thing. The other thing that I share with people is get a credit card and use a credit card for your purchases instead of your debit card. Reason being, your card gets stolen, no big deal. It's all insured, it's all covered, you've got the right fraud protection. If you use a debit card with your bank, it could take 60 days for you to get your money back. And that's a long time. You've got bills to pay, you've got all these other things. You don't need your vacation costing you an extra $5,000 and some sort of fraud or theft or something like that. And if you do it right, if you get like a miles card or a travel card, usually like the card I use gives me health insurance. As long as I buy the airline ticket with that card, they'll cover my health insurance wherever I am. They will insure any of my rental cars. They'll give me trip insurance. You know, like all of this stuff doesn't cost me anything extra. It's just a travel card. So that's something I highly recommend. Find what's right for you, but don't use your bank card. Don't use your bank card, because that is like a direct line to your personal cash.
That's your debit card you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, don't use your debit card. Use a credit card, because if something gets stolen, it's covered, you've got fraud protection. That's a good thing. The other thing I do, I opt for the belt with a plastic buckle. And that might sound funny, but depending on...
Where do you find those?
You can get them all over. You can
really?
Get them all over. Yeah, especially like hiking and camping stores. A lot of them have moved to like a poly, like a heavy poly type buckle. And it's just way better, because when you go through, if you have any little thing that's metal on you that you forgot to take off, now it's a big production. You know, you got to go through this and do that. Although... In New York, we have those special things where you put your hands up and it, like, scans you.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I'm wearing. I always go
off. It goes
off,
yeah.
Always, always. And it's like, I have nothing. They're like, we need to pat down your ankles. I'm like, there's only socks there. What do you mean my socks set off? You know, because they make you take your shoes off.
Are you wearing those foil socks again?
Yeah, it must be. Yep. So, the last tip I'll leave you guys with before we start talking about the IRS is not to exchange your money. So this is probably the biggest mistake I see people do all the time when they travel internationally. They go to their bank here and they trade money there and they get whatever, euros or crowns or whatever here. Or when they get over there at the airport or wherever they find, they change their money there. There's always some sort of fee and catch, whether like, so local banks will normally charge you the exchange rate plus 3%. Places will tell you there's no fee, there's no this or that. They're making money, guys. The way they make money is they just give you a lower exchange. A lot of times the banks give you a lower exchange anyways. So you're paying 3% plus a lower exchange. And I've actually had people who have basically paid about 23% exchange fee, had no idea, because of instead of exchanging it at, say, $1 to $1.50, you're getting an exchange at like $1 to $1.90 or something like that. So the trick is you take a bank debit card, you go to an ATM, you withdraw it, it's a direct electronic transfer from your account. Sometimes you still pay the 3%, but that's all you pay. And that's it. And it saves you a ton of money. I've been doing it this way for almost 10 years. And hands down, every time you get the best possible conversion. So those are just some of the travel tips I wanted to share with you guys in case you end up traveling. Think about those things. And it will certainly save you some dollars. And hopefully it'll save you some headaches too. So the thing that I wanted to leave you guys with today is the impact on the IRS for the government shutdown. I don't know if anybody's really talked about this or not. I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and an article caught my eye that said, oh, the IRS won't be able to issue tax refunds since the government shut down. Now, the end of tax season is a few months away, and you know, it sounds like there's, you know, open negotiations again. But you know, the next question, the next thought I had was, well, are they collecting our money? And so I did some research, and sure enough, yes, the IRS is staffed just enough to keep collecting your tax dollars and to pursue people who owe taxes.
But darn it all, because of that Trump, we can't send you your refund.
Yeah.
No politics going on there.
Yeah. So that, of course, I had an issue with. Right off the bat, it's like the government is staffed just enough to take your money, but not staffed enough to give it to you. And it is your money. Then I went on and I kept reading, and I'm just going to share with you guys this. Said that for many Americans, their tax refund is the single largest financial event of the year. And for the people who tend to file early in the season, they are taxpayers who count on a large refund to pay down debt, catch up on bills, or make major purchases.
If that's happening to you, by the way, just a footnote, you need to talk to your tax advisor and make sure that that doesn't happen. If you're getting a giant refund back, you don't want that.
Yeah.
Because you're giving an interest-free loan to the government.
And that's exactly what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the idea that you are giving the government your money interest-free to hold on to. And then if they shut down, they can't even give it back to you. So they're going to hold on to that even longer. And here's the thing. If you are counting on that tax refund at the end of the year to pay down your debt, that's a bad decision because you're paying interest all year. And the government's not giving you any interest on the loan you gave them. So you want to talk with your tax person, talk with your financial advisor, whoever it is that helps you figure out your finances, or maybe you don't have somebody. This would be a good spot for an advertiser right now. If we had a financial advisor for advertising or a tax firm, you know, you need to sit down with that person and say, hey, how do I get it so that come April or whenever you file your taxes that you owe $100 or you get $100, you know, and try to be within that range. Because otherwise, if you're getting a multi-$1,000 tax return, and say you have a car payment, well, what if you paid off that car payment early and didn't pay any of that interest?
Right.
What if you took that, you know, multi-$1,000s and put that towards the principal on your home? You know, you'd pay off your mortgage early and save a ton of money on interest.
Go in the college fund for the kids?
Yep. And then gain interest on that college fund instead of letting the government sit on it. So, yeah, when I read that, I was like, oh, this is not good. This is really bad. If that's what most people are doing, you know, for me, I got burned really bad a few years ago. My taxes got messed up somehow, and the IRS was like, "Nope, we're taking your money. We think you owe us $1,200. Ours now." And the reason they were able to do that is because I was getting a refund back. Not because, you know, or for any other reason. So they were able to just kind of take my money, no recourse, no anything. It took me 4 years to get my money back. I eventually
did.
Holy
moly.
4 years. It wasn't even worth it by the time it was all done. And that's when I made the decision, the government will never hold my money ever again. I will never be in a situation where they can just scoop it up and I have to fight for it. I will always be in the situation where at the end of the year, I will be responsible for my finances, and I will make sure that I pay them instead. And part of that is I've had more financial freedom because I have my money when I'm supposed to have it. I've been able to put my money into investments and interest-bearing accounts, or to just spend it on something nice for me or my wife. You know, maybe we go out for dinner or something like that. So I don't end up with that giant chunk of money at the beginning of the year, but my bills are all paid on time. I'm not paying interest. I like to think that I'm pretty responsible with my finances. And, you know, so that's why I want to share with you guys. We're here at the end of the show now. Talk with your CPA, your MBA, your tax person, and tell them you do not want a tax refund, or you want the smallest tax refund you can. I will catch you guys at our next show here on Radio Free New York.